in its mouth to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to OurRadioNetwork.com. Again, that's OurRadioNetwork.com/Time for an Awakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. You'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can download, read at later times, or share with your friends. And you can check out the Time for Awakening Marketplace in our partnership with the B.B. Toomey, with language classes, classes held by different professors both in the diaspora and on the continent. So check it out in our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Check out the marketplace on Time for the Awakening Media and make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, 8:10 in the city of Philadelphia. And we're usually in Freestyle Friday mode, and we might get an opportunity to do that a little bit later on, at least for the first hour of the program. We're going to devote to Mr. Carlton Sanders. If you remember 2 weeks ago when we had Mr. John Ingram on, who was one of the black poultry farmers out of Mississippi that were being forced out of the business and off of their land by the $3 billion a year, one of the poultry giants in this country, Cook Foods. It was two farmers mentioned in that article, Mr. John Ingram, and the other one is our guest tonight, Mr. Carlton Sanders. We'll be talking with Mr. Sanders about his experience with Cook Foods in relation to his business as a poultry farmer. We'll be right back to share with you his story after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And like I said, we're usually in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for Awakening on Friday, but we're going to have a special guest join us from our conversation that we had 2 weeks ago. But before I do that, let me bring in my co-host. Welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot. How you doing now?
How are you, sir?
doing fine. You know, I'm in my element.
I know it. I know it.
I know people are, hey, little Elliot, people have been complaining all day. They're in an air-conditioned building, you know, worrying about how it's going to be and what's supposed to happen tomorrow. And I know Mr. Sanders is down. You know, this what we get in here is probably nothing to what happens in the South, but I'm looking forward to a follow up for the discussion that we had with Mr. Ingram about what happened with you know, the poultry business and just big business and black farmers.
Yeah, this is basically a continuation of the discussion we had. It was introduced by Mr. Ingram a couple of weeks ago on Time for Awakening, and it's something that I remember that Mr. Ingram said, Richard, when he said that he, when he lost his land and his farm, that the remaining farmers tried to rally around Mr. Sanders to try to help him save his farm. So we're going to talk with Mr. Sanders this evening and welcome him in to Time for an Awakening. Mr. Sanders, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to have you on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Sanders, before we start talking about, you know, what you've been trying to do in recently, especially after the publicity of a couple of the news publications.
Right.
When it kind of hit the news. Let's go back. Talk about yourself as a farmer. When did you get involved in farming? Were you always involved? I mean, was it passed down from your father? Or just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Graduated high school. I didn't go to college. I wanted to, but I didn't. And I got a job making feed at a local mill. I didn't make any money. Worked a lot of hours, but we were only making $2.20 an hour. Back in 1977. So my cousin came down from Milwaukee and he asked me if I wanted to go back. I said, I think I will. So I went to Milwaukee and I got a job building cranes. And I started out, you know, right away, $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. So that kind of fitted my budget. So I did that. And when Ronald Reagan became president, you know, cut thing back and kept cutting back till we got laid off and got laid off. Finally, we just laid us off till we had to came back to Mississippi and, the guy down the road, he always had chicken houses and he always lived comfortable. He was a white guy, but he was nice. And I said, well, I'm going to try that. And that's what I did. I did it because of him. And like I said, he always got what he wanted and seemed like he had a nice, comfortable living. And that's all I wanted was just a nice, comfortable living. So that's how I got started.
So how big was your farm? How many acres?
I had 54.8 acres.
Okay.
And I bought 30 more.
Okay,
and I had 7 houses, and I had 188,000 chickens. So I fed Philadelphia quite well and Washington, D.C. area as well.
Oh, boy. Mr. Sanders, now talk about did you have any children, any sons or daughters?
I did. I was married, and I had a son, and he graduated Mississippi State, one of the highest guys there, and he he does good. He's engineering. So he, after all of the problems I had with these chicken cooked food, my wife decided she'd had enough. And, it's a 7-day-a-week job. There's tornadoes, hurricanes, lightning storms, thunderstorms, and all that kind of stuff. And if something goes wrong, you got to be there to make sure your generator starts up. Otherwise, you lose the whole house of chickens or whatever. So she just got tired of it, and cooked food kept giving pressure and putting pressure on me, and she decided to leave and left me, and I was by myself, me and my son. So that's the deal, but I was married.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you. Were your son was involved in the business with you?
He helped me.
Okay.
With that many houses, I needed help, so he helped me. He played football, and he did everything he could to, you know, make sure I didn't have to do it all by myself. So he was really helpful.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What? Go back, because Mr. Ingram told us about when he bought his farm. It was an existing poultry farm. And somebody came to him because he said that he wasn't interested in being a poultry farmer. Unlike yourself, you said that you wanted to do this. But he said that they came to him and asked him, you know, would you be interested being that you're already set up? And he said, yeah. And that's kind of where his nightmare started. Talk about yourself. When did things start going bad as far as dealing with this poultry company?
Well, now, I was the I was ranked number five out of about 4,000 growers. So that's really good. I was the top 10%.
Now, wait a minute.
And anything you're doing.
Now, you're talking about in Mississippi or nationally?
In Mississippi.
Okay. All right.
And
so I guess you were the top black grower.
I was the top black grower. In fact, in 2012, I was number one on one farm, number two on another.
Okay. Go ahead.
And it started going bad. And They told me at first, as long as you're doing good like this here, you won't never have to worry about no upgrades. So that was 2012, 2013, 2014. 2014, they told me that you're going to do some upgrades. So I went to the bank, and I got $93,000. That's what they wanted for the upgrades. So the bank said, do you guys foresee in the next 5 or 10 years that you're going to need any more upgrades? They said, no, absolutely not. We're good. 2015, of the same date, November 15th. I remember it just like talking to you. And they came back with a list of $240,000 worth of upgrade that time. And the bank said, no. So that's, you know, when that I was doing bad, they just figured out a way to put me out of business. A bunch of rednecks didn't like black people. No black service men. Nobody back in the office. They didn't even want black people cleaning up behind them. I never seen anything like it. And the funny thing about it, the president and CEO is from Chicago, Illinois. And I said, dog, I was there for all those years, and I never did meet nobody prejudiced and didn't like black people. And I just came out of D.C., and there was a white guy named Tony Grigsby, and he had the same problem with the same company. And I said, just an instant replay. And I told everybody up there, I said, don't think we're copying each other's notes. I said, we just with the same company, and they treated everybody the same way. I mean, you know, but the by me being on the black, that's what stood out. And like I said, I did everything I could. And I, you know, in other words, once I signed that contract, I was a slave. I couldn't satisfy them. I couldn't do this and couldn't do that. And when they said jump, you just jump up and don't say a word. That's all they want. They got no use for nobody black. No use at all.
So when you when you went to the bank, they were based on your productivity and the company being behind you, when you needed that $93,000, they were more than willing to give you whatever you needed.
That's it.
And they assured the bank that, well, he won't need any more after this.
That's right. They told him. They got their own record. But see what it was, the bank and them were working together.
Okay.
They even got the same lawyer, Baker and Donaldson, the baddest firm in the Mid-South or anywhere else. And so they knew that whatever they did, they had somebody to
legal
take
backing.
Care of the bank.
Okay.
That's it.
Wow. Now when it came back with the over 200,000 more additional upgrades, I know immediately you tried to get some help or tried to get people involved. I don't want to speak for you, but you let us know what happened after that.
I went to my banker. And my banker advised me, he said, because at first I owed $750,000. That's a lot of money. And I had paid it down to 70. When President Obama left office, I would have been paid out completely. Somehow or another, they found out. And once you're about to get your stuff paid out, they don't like that. Because, you know, you can tell them then, take them chickens and where to put them. So they found out that I was trying to get out of everything. And they did that to take my stuff. It was one guy in particular, he wanted my farm, my house and everything else, because he had one boy, he done put a man out and put him in his farm, and he wanted my farm to put the other boy in. And, you know, it's just a cutthroat organization, a cutthroat industry, and a cutthroat everything, and it's a mega million. They steal money from you, they take from you. I had a guy figure my weight tickets, and there was some $5,000 to $10,000 missing out of my paycheck. And those are the things that we have to deal with. And not only me, but all of those guys up there, they had the same complaint. So that's why we were meeting Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, I didn't expect any help from those guys from Mississippi, Roger Wicker and Hyatt Smith, Michael Guest. But now, like I said, Doug Jones, he went off. He promised he's going to get something done about it. And we got a bill coming up in August, and it's going to be going. By the way, you can find out all this information. I did a press conference there at the National Press Conference.
The Press Club.
Isaac Arms. Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Isaac Arms were there. Well, there's about 20 or 30 reporters there and writers. So you can find out all this information because I did a probably a 20-minute speech on it. So they recorded it, and it made the news all over, I put it that way. So you can pull it up, you know. You know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sanders, before I pass the mic to Brother Richard, you started going through your turmoil in 2012, you said, right, when it first started?
Well, 2014, exactly.
2014.
I was good, so good all those years. And the thing is, it didn't matter about how good I was. They had done said, made up their mind. They said, as long as you're doing good, it won't be no problem. But I was still doing good. But they found a way to get me because somebody told them that I was finna pay out. And see, if I'd have paid out, I could have told them, again, what to do with those chickens. And like I said, they had two more black guys. But see, John Ingram was first. Wesley Odom was second. And I got a brother named Jimmy. He was third. And like I said, they just didn't like black people. You find people like that nowadays. Mm-hmm. And the chicken industry is the worst. For I'm from Forest, Mississippi, is ranked number four in the whole United States in poultry, chickens. So you see how that is. You ain't got no pull or no backing, no nothing. You either do chickens or you're going to do, you got to go offshore somewhere or get your job in Tennessee somewhere. You know, that's what we do here in this area.
Okay.
So, in other words, the bank is not going to bucket and whatever they do, because the first thing they're going to say, we're employing about 8,000 people. And, you know, those 8,000 people got a job, and they're not concerned. I don't think they, you know, in other words, since Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump has been president, we've gone back another 30 years, I bet you. And it's getting worse.
Let me say this. Because we've had other farmers before on over the years. We've been tracking the Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit. We've had the named plaintiffs from the Pickford versus Glickman lawsuit on the radio program on several occasions. Mr. Eddie Slaughter, Lucius Abrams have been on talking about that lawsuit, which happened in, I think it was 08. And up to around right. 10 or 11 when they supposedly paid the farmers. When those things were going on, was it any meetings among some of the black growers or black farmers in Mississippi about what was happening? Because in retrospect, we can see that a lot of the farmers that were affected by this discrimination was never paid. A lot of the money went to lawyers and 501c3 organizations or people that didn't farm at all, and a lot of them were white. But was it any type of coalition, any meetings among farmers in Mississippi area about what was transpiring, or the information didn't? Give me a little background on that.
Okay. If you meet and greet and talk like you're talking about getting meetings and they find out about it, they terminate your contract. That's the end of your stuff. They say you are a disgruntled grower, and in other words, it's just like you got TB or cancer. Stay away from him. No, you can't do that. So that's how they got so much power.
So they basically use a fear and intimidation type of tactics.
Right, right, right. And that's why we was in D.C. I told them the Packerson Stockyard Act. That's what it's designed for. The Fair Labor Act. Why do you think it's called the Fair Labor Act? I told them, I said, no sense in making a bunch of rules. You need to enforce the rules that we already have. And like I said, the Packers and Stockyard, they can investigate and do this and do that. But that's where they can go. Their hands are tied. I'm trying to get a bill passed to give Packers and Stockyard and the USDA the freedom that they need to be able to investigate and to not only put a fine on the company, but to shut them down if they have to. That's what I want them to do. And a lot of things that we got accomplished and talked about. But it's coming out in August, which will be around the corner. And, again, going to be Cory Booker leading the way and Doug Jones. Now, with those two guys, we got a chance, but it got to go before the House and the Senate, and then Donald Trump will be the signing when it passes.
Brother Richard?
Mr. Saunders, I want to come back to something, but I want to start where you ended at. So the bill that is that you say Senator Booker and you said Jones are pushing the legislation, that is to do what again?
To make sure that farmers are being treated equal and fairly. None of this cutthroat stuff and under the table stuff. You see, we explain all of that to those guys. Just like the egg, that's where it starts at. Well, Cook buys eggs from Alabama, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina. And you know yourself, you're not going to sell your best egg. You're going to keep those best eggs for yourself. So the eggs that they be getting, I explained all that to those guys. They're 60-week-old. 60-week-old egg, it causes problems from the start to the finish. And then on the end, they break down. They get leg trouble. You may find a chicken with three beaks. You may find a chicken with 3 feet coming out the back, rear end back there. All those type things we farmers have to deal with. Mm. And our ideal is 52 weeks. 42 weeks is too young. They'll look like they'll be so small they can't get to the water. And those are the kind of chicken they like to have to give to a black guy. When you got those good chicken, 52-week-old, they take off just growing in it, and you don't have to worry about them. But those chicken 42 and 60-week, you're going to have problems from start to finish. And if you're a new grower, you're not going to be able to deal with that. Your money going to be on the bottom, and your pay going to be on the bottom.
Now, you were saying earlier that and I'm trying to get a timeline in this. You were rated as one of number of 10 growers within that area. Was Cook Foods the company that you were dealing with at that time?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Now
they begged me to get this thing done. They told me that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to get an understanding of what, not just about the upgrade, but from the time, because you were able to purchase and operate, you know, you said 84 acres and 188,000 chickens. So what I'm trying to get is that, but in 2014, things changed. And what I'm trying to get is whether, since you were all the time you were developing and being able to successfully work your chicken farm, everything was good, but something changed in 2014. It obviously changed with Cook because, I ain't going to say obvious. The next question I have is the bank. The bank that you were dealing with, say, in 2014, was that the bank that you were always dealing with?
I started out with one bank, but when I got ready to see, I had four houses at first, and then I built three more later on. And that was with the Bank of Forest. And when I went back to the bank, I went to a bank called Priority One. And Priority One, they were just a sweet. We got along good. The guy loved football. I love football. And we was perfect. He told me, I like working with you. I really do. I said, well, I like working with you too. And like I said, somehow or another, they found out that I was finna get them paid out.
No, let me make sure I understand it, because I'm trying to get like this transition, and which in 2 years they were able to put such a pressure. And as you said, it was the lawyers, the bankers, and Cook Company. And Mr. Ingram said it was a specific, I forgot the name of the person he said that came to. Did, you know, they kind of gave the information as far as what the need for the upgrade, but I want to go back to the bank. The bank that you were most successful with as you built the houses and purchased the land, that bank, that bank and banker had no problem. You had a good relationship with.
Yes, I had a good relationship with both bankers. But the thing is, Cook found out that I was fixing to get them paid for in 2017. Right. So they had to make a move to tie me down to make sure I was still a slave. See, I was about to get away from them.
Right, but and, with the, I mean, what I'm trying to get I'm trying to get an understanding is that with the so that would be with the second banker, second bank, that they got this information, and obviously the bank where in 2014 they they were asked Cook, well, are you going to honor this contract? And they said yes. They said yes. So now, and then they come back the next year in 2015 and said, well, you got to get another upgrade. Now, the bank had already understood that there was no more need for an upgrade based off of 2014. So it seems like the second bank, Cook went to them, or they had the understanding that they had to, as you said, put a squeeze on you because the banker obviously also knew the information that you were, you only had $70,000 to go, and you've been actually paying off all your debt. So Cook was getting the information from somewhere, and obviously the information was coming from the bank itself in order for them to come back with this upgrade issue, which put a major squeeze on you. I'm just trying to make sure I understand where the collusion is. You know,
well, at first,
had it always been
They were working together at first. Remember I told you they got the same attorneys, Baker and Donaldson?
Right. Right.
The banker had Baker and Donaldson. The company had Baker and Donaldson. They were working together at first. But when it got serious, even when I got put out, the banker came to me and told me, he said, I'm sorry, I should have loaned you this money and avoided this. He said, I really hate it happening like this. I said, you think you hate now? You wait till I get finished. You're going to hate it for real. I told him. And he said, well, I'm so sorry. I said, sorry, ain't worth for nothing. I said, look at me. I said, all of this out. And then, but now he told me, he said, we're trying to get these houses paid off. That's what he told me. And
you're trying to get the what paid off?
Get the houses, the houses paid off. So we would be complete, zero. And once I got them paid out, we weren't going to be borrowing any more money. See, like I told him in the meeting the other day in D.C., all of the farmers around here will be praying that a tornado come and blow those houses down and blow them away, or lightning hit them and tear them up. People just tired of that pressure, and they tired of being run over and being treated like a slave. That's what the problem is. These guys got all the power. And like I said, once you sign a contract, you become a slave. They ask you to jump, and you just say, hi.
Now, and you mentioned natural catastrophe. And Elliot, I'm just trying to, help flush out this, because I don't want to make it seem like conspiratorial compared to, and this is what I'm dealing with, Mr. Sanders, and I may be incorrect, and that's what I want to help. I'm dealing with my prejudgment that Mississippi has always been a state that has not really been in favor of successful black farmers. Would you say that's a fair statement?
It still is. You ain't got to be beating around the bush. It still is, from the governor down.
Right.
From the governor down.
So your success up to 2014, there was a reason.
Say that again, Richard. You broke up.
I said it was obviously a reason for that to happen. Because you were already showing success in from farming all the way up to 2014 until they brought up this upgrade issue. So I'm trying to understand what changed. And let me say, because you said, in 2014, the president at that point was Obama. So, and if I'm not mistaken, Elliot, the farmer court cases was also around, as far as the money being awarded to the farmers, $1 billion, regardless what happened. That also occurred under Obama. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, that's right.
But now the thing is, we didn't get none of that money. Sonny Perdue, He got all the money and then distributed, not to black farmers.
Right.
You know, like I said, some of those guys, we were talking about it earlier. They got the money and weren't even farmers. So, like right. I said, they're going to have to find somebody to distribute the money equally and fairly because they didn't do their jobs.
Sometimes, go back a second. You said Sonny Perdue. Evidently, you're talking about the agricultural director or whatever.
Right, right. That's what I'm talking about.
He was the former governor of Georgia.
I know that.
Now,
he didn't do a good job.
How did he get his hands on the black farmer settlement? Now, that settlement, I mean, we know what happened.
It was supposed to went to the black farmer, but it didn't. It did not.
$39 million went to Sonny Perdue?
Yes, sir.
And he was the governor?
He got his hands on it. Well, like I said, he was up there in D.C. He made a trip before we did. And like I said, that's the deal on that. That's why I know all of these guys was talking about that. Because, see, some of those guys were from Georgia. And that's what they were saying. How could the money go to him and, you know, he didn't deserve it?
Mm-hmm.
Big company and big corporation rule things, and that's just how it is. The poor man don't get no help.
And we understand that. And what I'm also trying to understand, I mean, again, speaking plainly, we know how the business structure works and their attitudes in relationship to black farmers' success. It's not about the black farmers not being successful farmers. It's about these other things. So what I'm trying to, what I would like the listening audience to be able to be clear about is that in spite of, for a period of time, a long period of time, a lot of accumulation of assets, you as a farmer, you were considered successful. So something changed in 2014 between the bank. As you said later, the banker said, you know, he wished he could have done that. Well, there was no reason for him not to be able to do it if you were successfully paying off and you were down to $70,000.
I was. Right. I didn't miss a payment. Everything was on time. And, you know, the time I got my money, they got theirs. I made sure that happened.
And you said that the bank and Cook Foods utilized the same law firm, Baker and Donaldson. So there is something. So what I'm trying to move to now is when I hear about Senator Booker and Senator Jones pushing this effort, I'm trying to understand there were no black elected officials, state level, local level, state level, or federal level, even with a black president in place, that seen or heard of what was going on at this particular time, especially around 2014, 2015. Were you aware of any black politicians that came to you understanding the plight of black farmers at that moment in Mississippi or outside of Mississippi?
It didn't happen. If they find out, I'm talking to you, let me just back up. If they find out we're talking and having this conversation right now, that is the end of your contract. They killed it. They say you are a disgruntled employee, a disgruntled farmer. And like I said, I got three brothers still growing right now for a different company. And I asked them before I went to D.C., what do y'all want to happen? What would y'all like to see? And they hung up the phone on me. It's not that they hated me. They are scared of retaliation as to what's going to happen.
You said three brothers?
I do. I got three brothers still growing.
Now, you're talking about physical brothers,
yes, sir. My brothers, my blood brothers.
And they were afraid to talk with you about the situation?
They hung up the phone. They didn't even want to talk to me, and they didn't talk to me. Because, see, if you get back, that they said something, and I took it to D.C., possibly they could get their contract terminated.
So they're checking farmers also.
Right. I got them a contract when I started.
Okay.
So that's the deal on that. You keep your mouth shut, but see, I ain't got nothing to lose. That's why I can talk.
Well, Richard, you know.
I've already lost it.
You know, you mentioned, Richard, about the legacy of Mississippi. Listen, the legacy of Mississippi is just like the legacy of this country as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But this seems to me that it's almost the same like a sharecropping system that our ancestors right. went through.
Right.
Well, when they were what I was finna say. That's what I was finna say next.
Okay.
We done gone back 30 years and getting further. There's no black. Mike Espy ran for and senator seat the other day, and someone put a rope in the around the governor in the Capitol building. Three ropes. Mm. The Klan still marching, and this, that, and other. Mississippi is still the dirtiest state and the worst state in the nation. It still is. There's no doubt about it. And the governor, everything Lily White and with these chicken companies, a black guy, you just sitting up there, yes, sir, yes, sir. And that's all. And if you get up and try to speak up, you that's the end of your stuff.
You know, Mr. Ingram.
I mean, I tried. And I brought in the USDA. Packaging stockyards, all that, and had it investigated. And when my weight tickets come up short, I said, I'm making less money than when I started. So I started having everything investigated, and that's how I found out what they were doing. And boy, you talking about giving me trouble. They told me if you want any more chicken. But let me back up again. A Vietnamese guy was going to buy my farm in 2017. And he was already growing chicken with Cook Foods. Had a contract, and he kept waiting around. I told him, man, I'm about to run out of time. Let's get this taken care of. I said, go down there yourself and ask them when they're going to give you a contract. But if they would have gave him a contract, he said, I got your money right now. I'm going to give it to you. And he went down there, just like I told him. They told him, you got 10 seconds to get out of this office, or you won't get another chicken. They hate black folks here. It ain't no other way around it. The governor, lieutenant governor, all of them are white, rednecks. They could care less about what's going on here. Knowing they're getting a paycheck and they want you to be happy with just a little of nothing.
And what I'm Elliot, you know, we talk about this all the time, Mr. Sanders, you know, because what I'm concerned as we move, as you bring up, here you have two other, now I'm not familiar, I'm familiar with Booker, who's now running for president, but I'm not. Familiar with Jones. But what I'm dealing with is that, and all of this that's been going on, the money that's been allocated and not going directly to the black farmers, and then what's going on in Mississippi amongst black farmers themselves, that the you know, members of the Congressional Black Caucus or others have not, nobody has looked into it or gave it voice and I think Mr. Elliot, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Ingram mentioned about there was a conference, I forgot the year it was, or some kind of discussion, and I think that the Holder was a member of the
panel. I think he said it was 2011 when they were meeting in Alabama.
Were down in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Ingram went. He asked me to go, but I said, no, if they find out I'm there, man, they'll cut me off just to show the world. So I wouldn't go.
And so we know black bureaucrats and black elected officials had some understanding, and now you made it clear from 2011 that this was going on in Mississippi and that black farmers needed some other type of protection than what they were getting if nothing else in the state of Mississippi. So what I'm trying to get, trying to make sure that the listening audience understands what you're saying, that when we talk about the and sharecropping, and this goes back to this, they're telling us to celebrate 1619. And I'm looking at the black tobacco farmer who came, Anthony Johnson, and the same kind of thing, who was supposed to be indentured, who was supposed to have been, you know, freed himself, became a landowner, grew tobacco. This is a Virginia, and this is 1619. And then later on, lose the land. So what we're talking about here is a historical legacy as it relates to America. I'm not clear on is, what is the actual understanding of the black bureaucrats who are a part of the USDA, the black elected officials that are whether they are in the state, because I assume there are some black elected officials in the state of Mississippi. And we know that there was a president of the United States at the time that this particular situation, you know, what was their advocacy or intervention.
Well, let me cut in, and then I want Mr. Sanders to put his slant on it. Richard, the narrative that, because they were aware of this, Mr. Ingram said that he wrote all of the people down there. He said he had spoken with, oh my goodness, I forget the man's
name. Benny Thompson.
Not only Benny Thompson, John Lewis, he said he spoke to everybody he could. So they were aware of this. But the narrative that they wanted to put out was that black farmers had been paid because of the discrimination of USDA. Everything was great. They got $1.5 billion. That was the narrative being put out. If you turned on regular terrestrial radio like Al Sharpton and some of those shows, that was the thing they wanted to put out, that Obama made sure black farmers were satisfied and paid. But that wasn't true at all.
No, I got nothing. John Ingram got nothing. None of my brothers got nothing. That's just the bottom line.
And the discrimination was still going on. We see it clearly.
Right, right.
It never stopped.
That's 100% right. Now, that's clear cut. You can't get any clearer than that.
Okay. Mr. Sanders, let me go back. You said that when you bought your land, it had three houses, and you built.
I built
three houses.
And later, in 1990. And then 1999, I built three more houses. So that's how I got so big in it.
So your houses was, as far as the poultry farmer, your houses was relatively new.
They were new. I built them from the scratch.
What is all this stuff about you need $290,000 of improvement? What are they talking about?
Well, that's upgrades. The first one was $93,000. The bank did it. And that put it back up to about $140,000. And the bank said, no more upgrades. But now they had called Cook Foods and asked them specifically. They couldn't be any clearer. They sent them emails and all that. They got proof of it. And they said, no more emails. As long as he's doing good like this. But what the deal is on it, they want to be to wash the chicken from the meal down there. They got servicemen, and they're all white, but they want to be to wash the chicken on computers. Like we talking now, they got computers. They punch a button, and they tell how much water they drink, how much feed they're eating, and look inside the chicken house and see what's going on in the chicken house from the office. So that was the deal. They wanted to get everything so modern and so updated, running by computer. So that's the deal on it. And that's the whole idea behind these upgrades, is to be competitive and to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak.
But they didn't want, obviously, they were still intimidating black farmers as they were pushing for the upgrade, because the bank wasn't going along with this.
That's it.
Yeah.
The bank called me in there and they told me, says, push come to shell, I'm gonna give you a house and an acre of land. And I said, what about 2 acres? Well, I said, I got a big size garden. And they said, well, we'll give you the house and 2 acres of land if the push come to shell. And then when it came down to it, he told me, he said, you must be out of your mind think I'm gonna do that.
Well, wait a minute, Mr. Sanders, wait a minute, hold it. The bank knew that you were under the pressure where you might lose your farm.
Right.
That they basically was doing business with you. And they said, if push come to shove and you lose out, we'll give you a house and 2 acres of land.
That's what they told me. I got it on record. And when I went back, I told them, what are we going to do? I said, the foreclosure might come. And I said, they're not going to put any chicken back if we don't get the upgrades taken care of. And so they looked at me. And they say, you must be out of your mind. I said, what is it? I said, I got it on paper where you wrote down here. If push come to shell, you're going to get a house and 2 acres of land. He said, they ain't worth the paper. It ain't getting wrote on. That's what he told me. I told you, man. We're in those good old boy days here in Mississippi. I mean, I thought we were going forward, but we're going backwards.
It's no consolation, Mr. Sanders. It's not just in Mississippi. We see... I mean, we're in an urban area, and I don't know anybody who would say, when we also talk about all the time, gentrification in the urban area, it's the same kind of process. Whether you talk about foreclosures, you're talking about people having to sell their land, you're talking about, you know, movement and developers. So we're, you know, and that black politicians are incrementally or, you know, really like intimately involved in the transfer back of the growth and the success that Black people have acquired. You acquired success in multiple levels as far as purchasing land, being able to be on productive land, being able to write and obviously that meant nothing.
That's exactly right.
You know, to the system as it is. But we, you know, and again, I'm not speaking to you and Elliot, you know, I'm emotional about this because if the listening audience of Time for Awakening listening audience don't understand that this is nothing personal, an individual can only do what an individual do. And Mr. Sanders, it seemed that you've done all to show how to be successful. But when have all the other systems, banks, lawyers, companies, large companies, and in multiple states working against you, what is it that they expect, any one of us expect, that individuals are supposed to do under those eyes? And Black people are always put under that.
Here's the thing is, with all of the mess I've gone through, I've had a stroke because I didn't get any sleep when I first found out I was going to lose. Four nights I stayed up all day and all night, tossing and tumbling and walking and worrying. That fifth night, about 3 o'clock that morning, I had a stroke. 2 days later, I had a heart attack. So I done had stroke, heart attacks. I've been about as dead as you could get. I'm telling the truth. And I've been a deacon for 30 years. I didn't want to hurt nobody, but I almost got my AR, and I did.
I can imagine.
And that like to kill me. And, you know, I don't wish this on nobody. And, you know, I thought we lived in America where people would be treated fair and equal, but we don't. And like I said, from the governor down, rednecks, rednecks, and more rednecks.
I guess your son tried to help you keep your sanity, Mr. Sanders.
Well, like I said, I've been trying to do the best I could to try to make it. And you know, I didn't want my son feeling too bad. I didn't have a choice. That's why I say he's been a good guy. He always checked on me and, you know, worry and make sure I'm okay and make sure I take my medicine.
You know, I asked you in private conversations about some of the Black farmer organizations, and several of the men I've had on and have a good relationship with two of the men that head the organizations. John Boyd I've talked to on several occasions, but Mr. Gary Grant and Mr. Thomas Burrell, I've have more intimate conversations with them. And those men, I know in their heart, they care about their farmers themselves, but their plate is so full with all of these. You know, we just had Thomas Burrell on maybe 2 months ago that was talking about that lawsuit against Stein Seed, another multi-billion-dollar company selling fake seed to African-American farmers so they don't their crops don't come back. I mean, this bombardment doesn't stop. And it's dealing with the food supply. See, that's another thing, too. We got our Black farmers here that are involved in this nation's food supply. They don't want Black people doing no business at any level, whether it's a mom-and-pop store in the Black community or whether it's being a farmer generating hundreds of thousands of dollars, as you did. You said you paid down a $750,000 loan to $70,000, so you wasn't making minimum wage.
Right. But see what the deal is, like I told you, from the governor down, these guys got backing, and they could care less. The governor, all he want to do is fatten his own pocket.
My mind goes to Mr. Sanders. We always ask, you know, because we trying to, we now have identified the problem, and I don't know, Elliot, is this the appropriate time to raise this? And we've identified that this is not, taking your personal experience out of it, this is not a new thing in America for Black farmers and Black people in general. So, you know, what I would like to tease out is, you know, based off of the experience, and I know you're going to D.C. and offering, you know, the information to the legislators of what they can do in order to make things better. But when you're looking at possible young farmers coming, wanting to come online, and I think Mr. Ingram mentioned that there were some that approached him, how do you, all things being what they are,
repeat that, Richard. You broke. Protection. You broke up.
And what advice that we could start thinking about to provide the protection for these things that are now a continuous definite. It's a definite. What is it suggest?
That's why I told them we have the Fair Labor Act. Fair Labor Act. We got the Packers and Stockyard Act. We need those acts enforced.
Enforcement. Okay.
We don't need to keep making rules if they're not going to enforce them and go by them. That's what a rule is made for, to go by it. It's just simple as that. Like you're baking a cake, you have to follow the steps, put those ingredients in there to make it what it's supposed to be. Same with the Fair Labor Act. If the Foreign Fair Labor Act was enforced and the Packers and Stockyard Act was enforced, because that's what was said back in 1930-something. That's why it was set forward. Because farmers were being discriminated against, just like myself. I'm still being discriminated against. So these rules are not being enforced. And I told them that, all of them, Bernie, Guinea, Corey, I told them, I said, hey, man, we need to get these rules enforced. We got rules, but now we're still trying to make more. But see, the thing is, they looking over them. And like I said, anytime people can get by, that's what they do. So these chicken companies, they bad about to pay under the table. Do you know what that means?
Repeat that.
They may buy Senator Booker a brand new car and a key shit. They may Senator Doug Jones a brand new four-wheeler and say, hey, that's from us. Keep your mouth shut. They don't mind doing it. That's all the time. Either they may just give him $100,000. Say, hey, now keep your mouth shut now. And these guys, hey, you know what they're going to do? You come up there, they're going to say, hey, it's over. Get out of here. Don't see about your chicken while you got a job. That's all they're going
to
say.
Do you think that had happened to some of the black lawmakers that you went to?
Thing to it. It has.
Okay.
We all stood up and went to the Capitol in Mississippi. And we had a lieutenant governor named Amy Tuck, a woman. And Tyson, you probably heard of Tyson.
Chicken.
Tyson took her out to dinner just before we met with her. And she had told us, don't y'all worry, I'm with y'all all the way. Don't worry. So that was like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. 12 o'clock, they took her to dinner. 1 o'clock, that woman told us, y'all don't get out of here. Says, I'm sick of y'all. She told everybody then, she said, I owed $170,000. She said, my bills have been paid. They are paid. They gave her $170,000 to go against us. So these big chicken companies, they make it happen. I'm not making it up.
Oh no, we definitely agree. We understand. Now, I'm one of those advocates of the consciousness of victory, and so therefore we, you know, and recognizing that these things are true, we, you know, how do we overcome that, and recognizing that all the systems, banks,
you got to get a black governor, you got to get a black senator. We only have Bennett Thompson, that's it, and he's been in there for about 20 years. I hope he don't ever retire because he does a good job. But
who is that?
Bennett Thompson. He's a representative. But we need some black senators, some black governors, lieutenant governor, and that's what we need. We need some more blacks. I mean, that's just the bottom line. We got to have some help.
And do you see that the you know, the farmers' experience that are most of the population, black population in Mississippi, do they have the same fear as you spoke about, and that's why have more black.
They do. But like I said, Mike Espy, he ran for senator in Thad Cochran's place, and Donald Trump came down here twice and campaigned for her in North Mississippi and South Mississippi, and she won by a few votes. But had it not been for him, then Mike Espy, a black guy, y'all know him. He was a former secretary of agriculture.
Right. Right.
And I'm so mad with him because, you know, he should be running for governor. He should be running otherwise. But he'll sit up there and won't do nothing. And we got other guys trying to run, but somehow or another, they don't win. And just like, you know, we just have a hard time trying to elect somebody black here because you don't know if they're cheating or what, but, man.
And does that mean when you say that, and I'm pushing down in the electoral realm as far as I forget what the population of blacks in Mississippi, but I understand it's a large population. Is a lot of people coming out when men and women like the, you know, good men and women like you know, SB and others. Come, well, are they coming out or they're
yes, sir,
but their fear?
Okay. Right. Well, like I said, Mike Espy, he had Hyde Smith by some 30,000 votes. Next thing you know, about 2 hours later, she was leading by 5 or 10. Mm. And she wound up winning. So, like I said, black folks just have a hard time doing things here. It's still Mississippi. It's still the dirty South. I mean, that's just that simple. The governor down, they think you're supposed to be happy and satisfied with little or nothing, basically. And like I said, that's just the way it is. I'm sorry. And that's the way it is. It ain't getting no better. It's getting worse. I mean, worse and worse and worse.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with our guests. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. We had two calls on hold. They dropped off, but give us a call during the break and we'll get you up with our guest, Mr. Carlton Sanders. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds and wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia. It's 9:20 Friday evening, to be exact, and it's about 90 degrees here in Philadelphia. I think it's supposed to go up to 100 tomorrow. Yeah, it's been a heat wave all week. I know Richard loves it, but we'll get back to our special guest that's with us. A couple of weeks ago, we had Mr. John Ingram on that was talking about his experience with Cook Foods, African-American farmer from the state of Mississippi. And we have the other gentleman that was mentioned in the published reports, Mr. Carlton Sanders. You heard Mr. Ingram say that he was the largest chicken grower in Mississippi at the time. Mr. Sanders said that he was number four in the state, and they forced him out of business and off his land. He's with us this evening telling us the story. Mr. Sanders, Just looking at, Ms. Sanders, you still with us?
Yes, sir, I'm
here.
Oh,
sure. Okay. Just looking at some of this situation, and Richard asked you to reflect on some things that maybe you would recommend that some young people do differently. I was looking at a published report either earlier this week or late last week that that the drought had killed, that had really damaged the poultry market. I think it's Nigeria or Kenya. And several countries in Africa are large consumers of poultry, and especially chicken. And they get a large amount of it from the United States.
Right.
You got African-American farmers that's being squeezed out of business by these companies and banks and lawyers. But you got this country doing business with our mother continent. It's something wrong with that picture, especially when you have black lawmakers there that are supposed to try to build the economy of black people in these cities and nationally, especially blacks that are in business and doing potential international business. You're in a professional trade where you can do international business. This country does international business with poultry. How do you, you know, it's hard for me to put it in words, but how do you look at that when you see some of these other countries that are black that deals with this country in poultry, for example, and you can't even do business in with these other places? Just looking at that before I go to a caller, just reflect on that, Mr. Sanders.
I want Chick-fil-A, Burger King, KFC, those guys actually to cancel the contract and let them see how it is. I've heard about the Kenya thing over there.
Okay.
And I would like the people all black people just stop buying from Cook.
You know what?
And let them.
Go ahead. You finish your thought.
And that would let them have something to think about at least. And maybe that will make them get better if them chickens sitting up in a warehouse somewhere, because they're running about 300,000 a week each shift. So the deal is let them think about what they're doing. Right now they just, like I say, it's a multi-billion-dollar thing, and it's a cutthroat operation. And they're saying one thing and doing another. Once them chicken get on a forage going over there, those guys don't have a clue as to who grow them.
Okay.
All they know is they're getting chicken, and they don't have to run them down and catch them like they used to. So that's the deal on that. They're just glad to get them. They don't know this is going on. And like I said, they're just glad to get the chickens. You know, and you're going to do what you got to do to buy some food. So that's the deal on that. Just like Iran, they sell a lot of them to Iran and Iraq. And
chicken,
you know, I said they sell a lot of chicken to Iran and Iraq.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Okay,
and oil, and oil, we get oil and gas from there. So that's the deal on that. So, but like I said, those guys don't know what's going on here. They think everything is hunky dory, but it's not. And they don't know nothing about this cutthroat. All they know is when they send how many pounds of chicken they want, they pay them with a check or whatever, and make another order. That's how it is. They don't know this. Just like you guys, if I wouldn't have started in ProPublica, you never would have known how bad it is here. You would have said, hey, everything's peaches and cream. And it's not, though.
What?
And I thank Isaac for putting that in the paper, because let the people know that how I was discriminated against and how things worked out.
Well, I wouldn't have thought it was peaches and cream, but I'm glad that I came across you men's story, because these are the things that our people need to know. They need to know about this.
That's it. Right. Yeah. I agree.
Let me go
but
to.
See, like I told you.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Those people just simply they don't know what's going on over there in Kenya. I mean, like I said, they're just glad to get the chicken.
Okay. Let me go to 646. 646.
Yeah. Good afternoon, to you, Brother Richard Elliott, and to your guests.
How are you, sir?
You know, basically, I just have to ask you this in all sincerity, sir. Do you No, matter of fact, let me go this way. What do you expect from Cory Booker and the rest of these politicians to do for you and for black farmers?
Well, we're trying to get them to get a moratorium on ag, as a merger with ag and all those type things. Like I told them, though, we already have a couple of bills, the Packers and Stockyard Act, and like I said, we just need them enforced. You can have all the rules you want. If they're not being enforced, then you're no better off. So I told them we need somebody to speak up, speak out for us, and that's what we're trying to get done. And Cory Booker and Senator Doug Jones and maybe Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, they're committed to doing that. And it's going before Congress and the House sometime in August. That's right around the corner. And once it passes, then the president signs, then it'll be law.
Now, let me just say this to you.
Okay.
Don't expect for Trump to sign anything.
Well, I agree.
The reality is this: he's not gonna sign anything. The reality is that everything that has been done for black farmers in the Obama administration and before has never really been implemented to the point to where, as men like you, haven't had the tragedies done to you on the level that it had. Now, I'm going to say this to you, and I'm going to be very straight with you.
Okay.
If I was you, I wouldn't expect anything, unfortunately, from Warren, Booker, Jones, or any other politician. Because the reality is, all they're trying to do is pander to you. I would hope that they would do the right thing by you. Because,
right,
you know, what has been done to you is absolutely sickening and tragic. You know, and I just want to know, did that white man that wanted your land, did he get your land in the end?
He did, yes, sir.
Mm.
And, he got my house and everything else.
And see, you know something, sir? I don't know what you're doing today. What are you doing now?
Just trying to make
are
it, trying to hold my head
now?
Up. No, sir, I can't. Disabled. And with all
okay,
of this.
Okay, so that's a good thing. You got a check coming in so you could pay your rent and you could eat. And you could basically, as you say, survive.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, hey,
that's
listen.
It.
You know, that's basically what it is. Isn't that wrong with that? Thank God that you worked and you're in the position to do that.
That's
I have
it.
No problems with that. But I say this to you, sir. And I say this in regards to those men that are on your line are the same men that killed us in Rosewood, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all of those places. And before you go to meet your God that you believe in, if you really want to serve your God and do something to thank your God for what he's done for you on this planet, you need to deal with those individuals. You understand what I'm saying? That's a reward to God. That's a reward to God. Now, you understand what I'm saying to you. If you go to meet your maker. Let me finish this. This is important. If you go to meet your God.
Wait a minute. Because what you're saying to this man makes no sense. Now, you ain't saying.
But you're telling him.
What they did to black people, that includes you. I understand. See, when you personalize it like that.
This man personalized. No, they personalized him. You don't see. This is what you don't realize, Richard. They personalized.
No, they didn't. They did the same thing they've been doing since 1619.
The man just said that the owner, who has ownership of his house right now, identified that man's home to take it away from him to put his son in his home.
But
that's
he also
what he did to this
but
man.
He also said it was a system of people,
no, bro,
business
bro,
people
bro.
To bankers, to lawyers, to
to politicians.
Hey, Richard. Richard, we're clear on that. The system is in place to do what they do. But when a man identifies you as a target to make his children's life and his life better, that is a direct act of war against you. This man identifies them.
It's a direct act of war against us all.
Yeah.
No, it's not, brother. No, it's not. No, it's not. You know why it's not against us? Because he didn't have to take that man's form. He didn't have to identify that man's form. He saw what that man did. He saw what those what that home looked like. Just like those white people that killed us in Tulsa and killed us in Rosewood and has killed us all the time that we've been in their midst. They have identified us. They have targeted us. That man was targeted.
And all of
that man was targeted. And you're not going to be able to convince me that he wasn't targeted. Because that man could have got somebody else's house. He could have bought another house. But he knew what they were doing to him. He's complicit. They all complicit.
Right.
Jay, thank you for your contribution, man.
Sorry about this, Elliot. But this really got me really fired up. Because, listen. It's a system of white supremacy that's in place to do what they do to us. But when an individual man picks out what you done worked your whole life for to give to your family and to be able to take care of yourself and to do what is done to them, it's absolutely need to be dealt with. Because remember this one thing. If the man hadn't worked before he got caught up in this system and didn't have times on the book, he wouldn't be able to get no disability and be able to feed himself and live a decent quality of life. It may not be the best life, but the man has a quality of life.
I understand. I hear you.
And that's what we need to recognize. It's no way in God's green earth that you identify. That's like me seeing what you have worked all your life for, Elliot, and I'm a barber, and I know what's going on with the other barbers association or whatever the bank and this, and I target to take what you work for with the complicity of others, and I'm supposed to let you walk away? I'm not a man. You're not a man. You can't be a man if you let somebody identify you and say, I'm going to take what I don't work for all your life. You're not a man.
Jay,
have a good night, brother.
Thank you for your call, man. Richard, listen, I hear his frustration. And if you read that story, you feel for Mr. Sanders because... And I do agree with you. This thing was done against black people because it didn't matter whether it was Mr. Sanders on that farm or it could have been you, Richard, or me.
Right.
It was done against black people. But listen, you heard Mr. Sanders himself said that he was to the point where he almost wanted to get his AR-15 and deal with business. And I understand getting to that point, I can't imagine a man having that amount of debt. And Mr. Sanders, do you still have any of that debt hanging over your head?
No, I don't. Once they took everything.
They just wiped the book clean.
Right. It was over then.
Wow.
Yep.
Richard, I can understand. Put it this way, Richard. I understand what you're saying, but I can understand the caller's frustration because when you read that article, You feel for Mr. Sanders, and you and it takes your mind back to what was going on with our ancestors during the turn of the century, when they worked hard and got these farms, and then you see white folks looking, and the next thing you know, they come and they burn you out or kill our ancestors and just take what's theirs. It's the same thing happened in Wilmington, the documentary of Wilmington on Fire, when they looked and seen what was going on in Wilmington, North Carolina, and in other places. So historically, this has been our experience here in this country, and it's just doing the same thing here in 2019. We see the same thing.
That's exactly right.
And I just have to say that the lesson, though, for us is, you know, that see, the individual acts that we may do doesn't demonstrate power.
That's it.
Yes, the act has to be done. But if we are not going to be knowing that we have someone who is going to take our back, then this system that is even broader, because you don't have no press, the press will make it, the individual is something wrong with them. The individual was broke down. Not black people was fed up, ain't not going to take it no more, that the individual was fed up.
Mm-hmm.
And until we respond, because they ain't responding as individuals, that's systemic.
Exactly.
Individual approaching them, but that is a group of individuals that have made a decision and sent one individual to do the deed. But when you telling one individual to do a deed, and you, me, and others are just standing on the side, then the system makes it just that individual. Until we say we are protecting any farmer, we are protecting any child, we say that, not the mother protecting the child or the farmer protecting himself. That's what I'm saying. That's a blatant vulgar individualism, and that's not a value that will go up against a system that is really oppressing, depressing, and killing a people, not individuals. Yes, individuals are being killed, but it's killing and subjugating a people. And when we reinforce that by sending out a loose, it says that we haven't developed, you know, in my way of thinking, and maybe, I'm not. It's a difference of point of view, Elliot. That's the reason. I respect the caller having a point of view and giving a suggestion, but I can't see giving a suggestion to an individual when we know we seeing cops kill people for nothing. Choking them, you know, banging them on the head, shooting them, you know, for nothing. But, you know, that as individuals.
Yeah.
And they're part of the system and get off. And they get off.
That's what I was going to say. We still have white guys shooting black guys in the back 30 times. It don't take 30 times to kill an elephant. One shot, all you got to do is shoot a guy. You're going to shoot him. And they'll shoot these guys 30 times. And that's because they're white and they can get by. Like I told you, the governor down, they backed these guys. And that guy a while ago, he sent it to trying to put it on God. I'm in good standing with God. I've been a deacon for 30 years. And like I said, I wake up in the morning thanking God all through the night. And that's why I'm here. I always believe in carrying God with me. I told those guys in the White House and the Senate and Congress, you need God. Y'all need to have prayer here. That's what your problem is. I said, God is not the author of confusion. And I was going to tell Donald Trump that, but he wouldn't visit with us. He done tried everything with everybody, but he hadn't tried God. And like I said, God, the Bible says, if my people who are called by my name, humble themselves and pray, seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will forgive their sin and heal the land. And it don't take no rocket science to figure that out.
Which
all
raises
of
the
God.
Question, Mr. Sanders. The churches in Mississippi are knowing that the press is not pushing your story and the story of black farmers, knowing that the politicians are not pushing it, are the churches on a regular basis in Mississippi presenting the narrative of what is happening to black farmers to their black congregation?
Nope. They only thing they do is go through the motion and go back home. They could care less, actually. They don't care nothing about that. They never brought this up. They never.
Now let me ask you something, Mr. Sanders, because you touched on it earlier. And if you look at a historical narrative, do you think is it that our people don't care, or are they afraid? Which one do you think it is?
The other black people, the black farmers, they're afraid. They're just flat afraid. They're afraid of reproach and retaliation as to what might happen to them. Don't nobody want to lose their home, their farm, and this, that, and other. In fear of retaliation, that's what the problem is. Just like my brothers, it's not that they are stupid. They are afraid. They don't want to be doing like I am. So they keep their mouth shut. And, you know, they don't get caught hanging around me. They treat me just like I'm a stepbrother or something.
Wow.
And would you say that that's the same thing with the black ministers that are aware? And I mean, I'm talking about the ministers within the county and in the state of Mississippi that is aware of the
black ministers in this state, as long as they get a paycheck, they could care less about anybody else. Hmm. I mean, I'm just being honest. They as long as I talked to my pastor and I told him what I almost did, and he just said, "Brother, I'm glad you didn't, and thank God you're still here." And
that was it.
He ain't offered me a penny. That was it. He ain't offered me a penny. He ain't offered me a love offer or nothing, which I wouldn't have accepted it anyway. But them people up in the D.C. area, Charlotte, and they asked me the first thing, "What did your pastor do? What did it have the church did for you?" I said, "Nothing. Absolutely." Which, like I said, I wouldn't accept it if they would have. I mean, that's just how I am.
And that's the point. That's the point, Elliot. Until, you know, and that's a solution. Until we can get the structures that we have that can be advocates. They don't have to go running, you know, shooting nobody. But we ain't That's even true. Projecting the message of what is occurring in the places that we can.
Yeah.
No, you know, we're telling somebody else what they should do, but we're not even projecting the message to magnify. And if that's our structure, we're not even doing that, then that means the individual we don't care about.
Well, that's what I just said. As long as they getting a big fat check, that's just, you know, they could care less. They probably feel sorry for me if I say something like that, but that's it. You know, there's nothing else to say about it.
Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and good evening, Mr. Sanders.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Good brother. I'm doing great. You know, it's painful to hear Mr. Sanders' story. And you can see that, you know, from the brother's story, you can see there is, you know, ain't no solution for us here. No, ain't no solution, because as you learn the rules, they change them. As you try to play the game, they change the rules on you, as the brother stated down there. You know what I'm saying?
No. Yeah. He did state that.
Yeah, they change the rules on you. As, you know, so these politicians, you can't trust them, because as he said, the lady, by 1 o'clock, she changed, tell them to get out of town. You know? So, you know, but look, you're a steel bank, brother. Is much needed on the continent. Your skill bank. It may not be needed here, but on the continent, we need your skill bank. So, what I am going to do, I'm going to contact some people at the AU to see if we can, you know, get the farmers here who are being disenfranchised to take their skill bank to the motherland, because with that Africa inter-trade thing, we're going to need farmers. We're going to need black farmers, because what they're doing, they're getting farmers from South Africa, like Nigeria, getting farmers, white farmers from South Africa to come and help them develop their farming program. That is ridiculous when we have competent farmers here. So we have to get ourselves organized to make it, because the farmer is the most important person in the nation. Because without
that's exactly
the farmer,
right.
Yeah, without the farmer, you can't.
That's
nobody
it.
Can
that's
eat.
It. That's hmm? That's what I told them in D.C. Where your breakfast come from, farmers. Where your lunch come from, farmers. Where your dinner come from, you got to have farmers. And see. All these farmers in Mississippi are going out of business, especially the black ones. And, you know, you got to have the farmer no matter what.
Yes. So we going to organize something where we can get your skill bank to the motherland. Because we need your skill bank there. Because I heard a report today. They said in Africa, in West Africa, 1 in 5 going hungry. In East Africa, 1 in 3 going hungry. That shouldn't be the case on the motherland. With all that water, all that sunlight, all that land, that shouldn't be the case. So we're going to have to make the connection with the motherland. So I am personally going to contact that lady, that AU lady who is here, because she's a Pan-Africanist, that ambassador here. I'm going to reach out to her. I will make some connection, you know, because ain't no solution for us here. Ain't no solution. Look, over 400 years we've been trying to live honorably among these people. And we come back again now with this orange man, you know, rolling back the clock again. You know, they make us move ahead a little bit, then they roll back.
The clock. Yeah.
Yes. So we need, you know, we're running on a treadmill with these people. We need to just divorce ourselves from them. You know, it's time. So, my brother, keep on keeping on. And okay. I personally go see if I can make some inroads, because it's time. It's time. This, you know, this is going on too long. Anyway, good brothers, thank you for the program. Take care.
And Brother Marcus, if you come up with some information, you can always email me, and I'll be in touch with you anyway about the journalist from the Sudan.
No problem, good brother. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care now.
Well, look at here, you guys. My batteries are getting low, and I've enjoyed everything. You have a blessed evening and a good weekend. Thanks, you guys, and I appreciate it, okay?
Mr. Sanders, before you leave, I want to let you know that if we come up with any information, I'm going to be in touch with you. I'm going to turn your information over to some other folks that might want to have you on another program. So I'll be in touch with you. We'll talk. But I want to thank you for being with us, and any help that we can give you. If you get any more information about what has happened and results of you going to Washington, the door is always open, and you can come on back with us.
Okay, but like I said, in August, they're going to be meeting the Senate and the Congress, and a gentleman said a while ago, it's not going, but you got to be hopeful, and we just hopeful right now. And, you know, we want to get this thing taken care of. And he's talking about Trump not going to sign. There's enough pressure. He will. But so that's the thing is, we're hoping we're not going to give up. And they invited us back. So they told me earlier today that I might have to fly back up there because they want me there and tell my story again. So I may have to go back to D.C.
Well, take Mr. Ingram with you. Two is always better than one.
Yeah. Okay, you guys have a blessed weekend, and thanks again.
Thank you, sir. I'll be in touch.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Richard, let me get this call in, and then we can kind of reflect on that conversation. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot.
How are you,
Brother Richard? How y'all brothers doing?
All right, now.
Can you hear me, Elliot?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I listened to the conversation with Mr. Sanders, and I must say, Brother Ellen Rich, his story was very riveting. I mean, very riveting. I mean, you know, and what's so sad, Brother Ellen, and I appreciate Brother Marcus' comments prior to my call, you know, it was so disheartening, if you will, is the lack of support from these black politicians, man. You know, I know 3 weeks ago, Ellen, when you was talking about Stacey Abrams, when we had the brother on there, the brother on there, the black farmer.
Yeah, Mr. Ingram.
And the lack of support.
Mr. Ingram, that's his.
Mr. Ingram, thank you. Yeah,
he said he went to Stacey Abrams.
And he said Stacey Abrams just pretty much dished him and stuff. You know? And I'm saying to myself, it's a disgrace, these Negroes, man, whether it's on the state, federal level. I mean, it's sad. I mean, That's one. If you ever know anything about the teachers out of Elijah Muhammad, he always said land. He always petitioned America for land, and we deserve that. Because anybody that got any sense of brain knows land is important for any people that want to be a sovereign nation, even a nation like us, as a people, a nation within a nation. You got to have land, especially farmland where you can feed yourself. I mean, don't that fool realize that she can't all her life think that she's going to just have a hand in a white man's kitchen? Because a white man can cut that kitchen off, and what's she going to do then? I mean, she's not even thinking like an intelligent woman. You understand what I'm saying, Elliot?
Yeah, I follow you.
I mean, she's not even thinking. She sees some of these Negroes, they think because they Congress people or senators or governors, they think they're going to always have their hand. The white man can cut them Negroes off at the pump. What they going to do then? I mean, they're not even thinking long term and stuff. For her to be so dismissal of Mr. Ingram, it shows how ignorant a lot of our people are. And she's not by herself. There's a whole lot of them like that. That joke that we have here in Pennsylvania, the so-called congressman. I mean, he's a joke. I mean, these Negroes, they don't even think like intelligent black men and women. They don't even think about having something of your own, you know, having farmland where you could feed your people, factories where you could employ your people, have your clothes. All you think about is goes up to the white man, these Zionist Jews. All them Negroes thinking about their mindset is so twisted and stuff, man. You know, it's a disgrace. I mean, people like Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams, all of them, they should be jumping head on to support these black farmers. And hey, Obama was in office for 8 years, and he could have used that as a bully pulpit to make sure those black farmers was properly compensated. He didn't do it. You know, it's like Brother X called him Barack O. Bush. I mean, it's a disgrace with these Negroes, man. I mean, you know, you should ask yourself, whose side are they on? You know? You see, it goes beyond Ellen Richard on them just saying that some Negroes is ignorant, which a lot of them are. Some Negroes just willfully Negroes. They're just willfully traitors. That's all. I mean, there's somebody here to call for what they are. They're not stupid. They willfully selling out their people, making sure that they got their head of these white folks behind while their own black folks going to hell in the handbasket, while their black schools and black communities closing, or if the ones that remain open don't have decent supplies, don't have toilet paper, don't have updated books and computers, while white schools, we pay the same taxes white folks pay, and in a lot of cases more, our schools is dilapidated. I mean, how long are we going to keep putting up with these foolishness from these Negroes, man? Some of these Negroes on the city, state, and federal level, they need to be ran out of town, and when I say ran out of town, past the city limits, and don't come back. The sign should be straight arrows this way, no arrows pointing back. Get the hell out of town and don't come back. I mean, it's a disgrace, man. I mean, they are absolute disgrace. Imagine how far Mr. Sanders and Mr. Ingram and all them other black farmers could be if they had support from the black caucus. I mean, some real support, not this lip service and nonsense. I mean, imagine how strong these brothers could be right now, you know?
Yeah.
It's a sending the shame to the creators that these Negroes are supposed to represent us. Like, they are a disgrace, man. I'm telling you, they are a disgrace, man. I mean, oh, man, I tell you, it's enough. Like Marvin Gaye, it's enough to make you howl and throw up both your hands. It really is, you know?
Brother, I, what can I say?
You know? Oh, man, I tell you. And last point, I know y'all are reaching very winded down. And like you said, like here with the same with the police situation. You know, these policemen have been doing these things for years, and you're just getting some of these Johnny-come-lately Negroes coming to the forefront. They should have been out there. And like I said, they happy here in Philadelphia. And I'm not trying to knock the whole thing. I mean, you got to start somewhere. But like I told one of the moderators on Teresa Rader today, I said, getting those 13 officers fired, that's fine. I mean, you got to start somewhere. I'm not going to totally knock it. But keep in mind, you know that racist FOP is going to fight to get their jobs back. But see, Elliot, you had, and I close with this, Elliot, so you and Richard could get your night started. You made a good point several weeks ago, Elliot. You said what Ross should have did was fired all 300 or something. Because that way he would have tied up the system. He would have tied up that FOP. Because they, like you said, Elliot, they can't get 300-something officers reinstated. Because the money, the time, the manpower, the legal fees, it could have pretty much put the FOP in financial ruin. But just fine, just 13, he left the door open for them bastards to get their jobs back. So your point was definitely well taken. Like, he would have fired all 300-something of them bastards. You would have had a hard time getting a lot of them rehired.
Because he had the power.
He
had the power to do that. Now,
sure.
Joe and Richard, I don't know whether you heard it. during that press conference, I think it was yesterday or late in the evening, when him mm-hmm. And the mayor was up there, they got Ballard Spahr, who is one of the largest firms in this city.
Yes, it is.
To look over. Did y'all hear that? They got them to look over to make sure that they wasn't violating their First Amendment rights and things like
sure,
that
before I
they
I heard that.
Chose mm-hmm. these 13. Did you see that, Richard?
No, I didn't.
Now, again, that's using the taxpayers' money to investigate this. When he had the power to just say to fire all 330, it was 330 officers that was on that social
that's
media
right.
page.
He could've fired every last one of them.
And then put the onus on the police union. You spend your money to get them guys' jobs back. I ain't
exactly.
going to spend the taxpayers' money to get racists back on the force.
Exactly.
And plus it was some of the top brass. Out of that 13, you had some top brass, some captains and all. They don't want to release the names of these people. What are you going to protect
mm-hmm.
them for? Why are you protecting them?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to fire 13 of the 330 and then claim the way they spun it in the press conference like this was a new thing and caught them off guard. How in the hell,
mm-hmm.
8 years ago, they had dome lights, which was the same thing. White
sure.
officers on
sure.
there disparaging black people, calling them all kind of names, the N-word,
mm-hmm.
everything else, and then they do it again. In fact, I ain't going to say doing it again. It's obvious they never stopped.
They never stopped. Exactly. And Elliot, let me say this, Elliot, for the Tom and Wick listener audience that listen around the country. And it's not just the police department, even the fire department with their race. You have a nooses in some of the firehouses. These white racist firemen have put nooses up there. The valiants who represent the black firefighters, they have the step to the white firefighters union or the regular firefighter union that represent all the officers about that. It has been several incidents where they have found nooses in black firefighters' lockers and stuff like that. So we see that mindset is not only prevalent in the police department, it's prevalent in the fire department as well, you know? Which, again, I'm sure don't shock you and Rich. I mean, we know this is America, you know? I mean, these people are some sick, hateful, vile people and stuff we're dealing with and stuff, man. They're inhumane. Like Brother Wayne, God rest his soul, used to always say, Ellen Richard, he says, the more and more I've seen how many whites in this country act, he says, they're not just immoral, they're amoral. He said, it means they have no morals. And Wayne was absolutely right about these people, because Wayne's seen, he grew up at a time when he grew up, he was several years past that, but he said he remembered the stories that his grandmother and grandmom told him that they grew up in the South, of actually seeing black men, and in some cases, Elliot and Richard, seeing black men hanging, in some cases, black women hanging from trees in the South. Because, like, you know, most all black folks in this country, we got fat roots in the South. And he said he used to see grandmoms to sit and tell the stories and say, Jimmy Wayne, you know, back when 1918 down in Mississippi, North Carolina, I saw a black man hanging from a tree and stuff. Saw a black woman hanging from a tree. I mean, this was just commonplace down there and stuff. I mean, these people have been doing inhumane, barbaric things to black people from time immemorial. You know what I mean? So, I mean, these are some hateful, vile people we living under, man. And under this dimwit and this orange face that's in the White House, they just feel more bold. Not that they wasn't just as racist under Reagan and Bush and them. They was. I mean, and Clinton, too, and all the rest of them devils. But the point is, they, for some reason, under this joker, they just feel more emboldened. They feel more bodacious with this, for lack of a better word. You know what I mean? So it just let us know we got work to do. We got to stay vigilant and keep doing what you're doing, Elliot and Richard, having men like Mr. Sanders on, Mr. Ingram and others, because this is to fight for our survival, man, because like I said, we got to look out for our children's future, because we're not going to live forever. So after we make transition, we want to make sure our generations after us live in a world where they can have a just chance of having a good life, get married, have a family, and live a good quality of life without having to have the white man's foot constantly on their neck. So I thank y'all, brothers, like Brother Marcus. I thank y'all for a good show, and you keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate Brother Marcus' enthusiasm and support for the motherland, because that's definitely an option and stuff. You know what I mean? It may not be the option for everyone, but it's definitely an option that we definitely need to consider. So thanks, Brother Ellie and Richard, for y'all time.
Talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, come up to the end of another program, so
yeah.
I'm glad that we had an opportunity to speak with Mr. Sanders, and he had an opportunity to talk about his story. I'm going to try to make sure that he has some other venues to kind of express some of the things, because That's why a lot of these places do, companies are doing what they're doing. And these are not mom and pop. These are multi-billion dollar companies that do international business. And they're doing this because of the fear. You heard Mr. Sanders say it. You heard Mr. Ingram say it, that the other black growers in the state are afraid to do anything about it. It reminds you of the sharecropping system.
Oh, yeah.
It's no different. The only difference, Richard, is that when our ancestors back then wanted more money for what they were doing, the produce or whatever they were producing, the man would you'd see them swinging from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd have to run for their life or run out of town and stuff like that. They're not doing that now to the extent that they was doing it, but they're destroying the men in other ways. Like they destroyed these two men, destroyed mm-hmm. their lives. The man had two strokes, lost his farm, lost his land, lost his wife. Well, history repeating itself. That's what we see. So unless we're going to change this dynamic, and we can do it.
We have to.
Yeah. Well, we come up to the end of another program, and we got some programs lined up for the next upcoming weeks. We'll probably have historian Renoka Rashidi paying us a visit. He contacted me the other day about coming back on. He told me I hadn't had him on in a while, and he's right, because when I checked some of the past programs, it's been a couple of years since he's been on. So we're looking forward to having him on. I think he's leaving the country in August 14th, I think he said, something like that. So we'll have him on before he goes. And a couple other programs lined up. And speaking of programs, stay tuned after the program's over for the Warren Ballantyne show. It will be on following our program. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Oh, save the children. To save the children.